Hello and welcome to On Purpose, the audio subscription service for the chiropractic profession. I'm Dr. Patrick Gentempo, and this is On Purpose on the road, as you can probably tell by the extra little sound of echo in the audio. We're not in our studio. And Dr. Kent and I are down here in Florida, South Florida, and we had an opportunity through a On Purpose listener, Dr. Sal Martingano, who's right outside of Melbourne, Florida. What's the name of this?
Palm Bay.
Palm Bay. So we're in Palm Bay, Florida. And Sal let us know about a medical doctor with a fascinating story and some spectacular views that we think are very aligned with our vision and purpose and principles in chiropractic. Her name is Dr. Rebecca Carley, and we had an opportunity to meet with Dr. Carley here at Dr. Martingano's office, so we're actually sitting in this beautiful office. And I got to tell you, I'm looking at a wall, and I see Polaroids. There's got to be hundreds of them up there.
500.
Okay, 500 Polaroids of children that are you know, being adjusted in the office with a great sign that says, unsupervised children will be towed away. It's kind of in the... in the little kids area.
Space Coast Cairo kids.
Yes. Yeah. So this is called the Space Coast of Florida.
Yeah, this is the lower Space Coast, yeah. We're underneath the Kennedy Space Center a little bit.
Yeah. So we're here, and Dr. Martingano has been kind enough to lend us his office so we can interview Dr. Carley. And sitting to my right is Dr. Kent, as always. Dr. Kent actually was expected to go back yesterday, but delayed the trip to be able to stand by and do this interview because we think that the information here is profound, important, and a part of what the revolution is that we've all been trying to create in chiropractic. And I think that my instincts tell me that this individual is going to facilitate a lot of it. The information is quite current. We've read the website, her website. All her contact information will be on your reference sheet so you can start getting all this information. And I'll say from the get-go, in case I forget to mention this later, that for you people who are out there who are heads of your state boards or on the Continuing Education Committee and so on, that Dr. Carley is available for public speaking and I think would make a fine presenter at your conferences. So let me introduce, first of all, Dr. Rebecca Carley, and thank you for taking your time with us today.
Thank you so much for this opportunity. I've been trying for years to get involved with the chiropractic profession at the upper levels because I've always known that they were going to be my allies in causing the death of medicine.
Okay, well, now you get a sense of what this conversation is going to be like. So, if you can, Dr. Carley, let's start with your background. Tell us, why you went into medical school, your whole journey through, and what kind of brought you to this day in a thumbnail, if you can.
Well, I went to medical school because I wanted to help people. I wanted to help people heal. And by strange circumstances, a strange series of events, I actually, surprisingly enough, ended up being a surgeon because I believed that if there was a problem with people, that you could actually cut out the problem and fix it because of an experience I had myself when I was a child. I had a perforated Meckel's diverticulum, and I went to the doctor, and he cut out the problem, and I survived, and it was a beautiful thing. Mm. So because of the fact that I also happened to work with a couple of the probably only compassionate surgeons on the planet, I believed that I could go into surgery and help people.
Now, I just wanted, because some of these, just to kind of establish your background, I think on your website you got some awards, in surgery.
Yes.
And you also did some work in emergency care. So can you talk a little bit about
the
details?
And then you published a paper in ultrasound. I guess, you're not just... Yeah, your average doctor in the road. You've done some pretty profound stuff.
Okay, well, let me go back a little bit. I actually started in the field of x-ray technology. I started as an x-ray technologist. I was from a very poor family, and although I always wanted to be a doctor, I never believed that I would have the opportunity to do that, so I became an x-ray technologist. I subsequently got involved in the field of diagnostic medical sonography when it was just beginning, and through an amazing series of events, I actually started doing fetal echocardiography because of the fact that I was working at Mount Sinai Hospital at the time, and I had studied pediatric echocardiography when I went to school, And I actually did publish one of the first papers on fetal echocardiography before I even got my bachelor's degree, which was published in the Journal of Clinical Ultrasound, which was the premier ultrasound journal at the time. And this is what opened up a lot of doors for me to go to medical school. Let me say that as I was working with these various doctors, I always said to myself, you know, I could do this, because I saw that many of them had no clue. So through a series of events, and let me just say, because this is very important, I was actually in a very serious car accident right after I graduated from Kings County Downstate Medical Center, where I got my bachelor's degree in diagnostic ultrasound. And I had a severe whiplash injury to my neck, and I went to a neurologist. He put me on all these various drugs, as they always do, and told me to wear a neck brace. And I ended up actually in the hospital with a severe problem, totally unable to have any bowel movements. And my neurologist actually made the determination that I had a very serious pathology going on with my cervical spine. Gave me a cervical myelogram. This was before the days of MRIs and CAT scans. I had a severe reaction to the myelogram. I ended up in the hospital for a week with a spinal headache to the point I had constant vomiting for the whole time I was in there, and that's the most, you know, sick I've ever been in my life. So this was very serious, because of course the myelogram was normal. While I was in the hospital, the third year medical student came to interview me, and, you know, took some time, as third year medical students will do, and realized from speaking to me the large amount of medication that this neurologist had me on, determined that that was actually what had caused the inability to have a bowel movement, that I was basically impacted from all the codeine and all the other stuff that he had me on, and determined for himself that this was basically a drug-induced problem, not to mention the fact that he whispered in my ear that what I needed to do was go to a chiropractor. Now, of course, in school, we're always taught that chiropractors are quacks, and, you know, how dangerous you all are as you break people's necks, as you're adjusting them, et cetera, et cetera. But because of the fact that I was not able to move my head after about 3 months of wearing this neck brace, and I was in my mid-20s at the time, and I knew that I was headed for some serious trouble, I did, in fact, go to a chiropractor. And it took him about a month and a half, I would say, but at the end of that time, I had absolutely no pain in my neck whatsoever. So this is, of course, what made me realize that the chiropractors were actually performing a wonderful healing service to humanity, because I had experienced it myself. And this is what put the idea in my mind that perhaps they weren't telling us the truth about everything in school. And this is before I even went to medical school. The same third-year medical student became friends with myself, because I was so grateful to him for all he had done, and told me basically what I needed to do to go to medical school, because I had always wanted to do this, and advised me as to what additional courses I would need to take, etc. So I did. So I spent another 2 years in college taking physics and chemistry and biochemistry and all these various things, and actually applied to medical school after that point, was accepted to two medical schools. I decided to go to State University of New York Downstate Medical Center in Brooklyn because it was the more economical choice, and ended up going to medical school. I began in 1983. Very interestingly, the neurology doctor who had actually misdiagnosed me and caused me this severe reaction became my neurology professor. And I'll never forget the day that I informed my class of what had happened to me and how the chiropractors had actually helped me. And, of course, this did not make me very popular with that neurology professor, but this is one of my problems, is that I must speak the truth. And that was just the beginning of what happened to me, what led me on this road today. A couple other important things I just want to mention. The chairman of my surgery department, Dr. Bernard Jaffe, at that time, was involved in research fraud. I was doing surgical research because of the fact my goal was to actually become a pediatric surgeon and repair some of these terrible anomalies that children do have. And there was a number of us who knew what was going on, but unfortunately, the attitude of most of the people at the institution was that it was a bad time to lose the chairman. As a matter of fact, that's what the head of the medical school, the dean, told me when I went there to talk about it, because I found this so outrageous that they were knowingly allowing research fraud to go on in the institution. And the residents had the same attitude. They did not want to lose the chairman, because then, of course, there would be ramifications, and perhaps they would not get the same...
they'd lose their grant money and so on.
Exactly, and they would not get the same opportunities down the line. So what I ended up doing was going to the media, and it took an entire summer of exposés for them to expose what this man had been doing, and he was eventually asked to leave the institution. Subsequently, he became the chairman of research at Tulane University. And that's when I said to myself, apparently there's something about this man. He's in some club within medicine that is really causing a lot of problems. And, of course, the politics of it all became self-evident
But there's already media out there saying that this guy is involved in research fraud, and Tulane still had the temerity to hire him? I mean, wouldn't they be worried about how that might splash back on them, or they thought they can manage it?
Well, apparently not. And this is why you have to start asking yourself the question, why would they hire him as a chairman of research after he had been basically forced to leave the institution in New York because of research fraud? And now that gets into the anti-Hippocratics and this certain group within medicine, which actually is causing most of the death and disease, I've realized, which is, of course, making the pharmaceutical companies very rich on doing what they do. But this is what started my journey into realizing just how bad the problem is within the medical establishment.
So at this point now, you're a surgeon?
Yes.
And what type of surgery were you doing?
I was actually a general surgery resident at Kings County Medical Center, which is the biggest medical center in the entire country. Mostly what we dealt with was trauma. So I did a lot of trauma surgery. And actually, after this experience, what happened with Dr. Jaffe, that's what finally made me decide to leave surgery. I was so disgusted with what had happened with him and with various other things I was doing. For example, I was doing laboratory research at the time, as I said, because I wanted to get a pediatric surgery fellowship. This is a very competitive area of surgery. And my mentor in my laboratory experience was constantly telling me to change my hypothesis when the results of the research did not come out as expected. And, of course, I had a problem with this, and I refused to do so. And just a lot of different things that happened. For example, in Kings County Hospital, there's a lot of poor people that come there. It's a lot of Medicaid patients, homeless people. And I'll never forget one particular situation where we had a woman come in, 35 years old, who they had planned on doing a gastrectomy on. Of course, this is cutting out one's stomach. The woman had no clue what they were going to do to her. And as the resident on the case, I was asked to go in and get the informed consent from the person. And I basically asked her if she knew what a gastrectomy was. She said no. I told her, they're going to cut your stomach out, ma'am. If I was you, I would get your clothes on and leave the hospital immediately, which she did. And this is the kind of thing that I would do. Now, the only reason they couldn't punish me for this is because I got very excellent grades on my in-service exams, and the patients loved me because I treated them the way I would want to be treated. Because of the fact that I've spent a few days in the hospital beds myself from the perforated Meckel's diverticulum, from this car accident, various other things that have happened to me, I always put myself in the shoes of the patient. And this is why I knew that there was just something about this medical experience that was not resonating with me. I was not able to treat people the way I wanted to treat them. As a matter of fact, what finally made me leave the medical profession completely was an experience I had where I was asked to go tell a woman who had metastatic bone cancer, who had been admitted to the hospital for quote-unquote therapy, that she was being sent home because of the fact that her coverage had run out. And when I spoke to this woman, I took off my white coat, I sat next to her on the bed, I held her hand, I looked at her in the eyes, and I explained to her what the situation was. This woman went and told everybody on the ward that I had done this, and I was immediately called into the chairman's office and told that I better never do that again because the patients would grow to expect it. And that's when I finally decided that this is not for me. Simultaneously, at that time, I was getting married, and I decided that I desperately wanted to have children. The old biological clock was ticking. So I decided to take some time off and, you know, have my child and figure out what I was going to do. Because of the fact that I had still been indoctrinated with all this vaccine propaganda, my son Joseph was fully immunized. I got him all his inoculations. I believe he had 25 or so by the time he was 2 years old. And by coincidence, if you believe in coincidence, I happened to go to a naturopath at that point for myself. I had endometriosis and a non-union fracture of my foot. And someone had suggested to me to go to a naturopath, which, let me say, I never learned that word in medical school, nor did I learn the name homeopathy. I went to this naturopath. She gave me these little sugar pills, which I put under my tongue, which healed both conditions. Mm-hmm. And she just happened to mention to me that there was also a homeopathic remedy that could detoxify the harmful effects from vaccines. Well, what does this mean? I said to myself, harmful effects from vaccines? I never learned of any harmful effects of vaccines. But I decided to give these remedies to my son, Joseph, who became a different child. I watched my son transform. It was like watching a butterfly come out of a cocoon. I did not know that he had any brain damage until I saw the results of reversing the brain damage.
So you had no idea that there was anything wrong with him at
exactly.
this point.
Exactly. He wasn't quote-unquote autistic. He was mm-hmm. speaking. He was doing, you know, yes. certain things. But because of the fact that I was a surgeon, I had no experience in pediatrics, certain things, certain symptoms that he did have, I hadn't, you know, realized, mm-hmm. I hadn't recognized. And as I said, it wasn't until I detoxified him that I actually saw for myself that, in fact, he had been damaged. Mm-hmm. And that's when the Ford light went on and I started really doing some research into inoculations, actually found out what's in there. Mm-hmm. And I must say that they do teach you these things in medical school, but because of the sleep deprivation and the nutritional deprivation and all these things, the information just goes into the brain where you regurgitate it out for exams, and then you forget about it. Mm-hmm. And once you become a resident, mm-hmm. you just start writing those prescriptions. So anyways, not only did I reverse the inoculations in my son, but I also did the same thing with myself mm-hmm. and my dog who had cancer, mm-hmm. reversed my dog's cancer, reversed a lot of symptoms that I had myself, and that's when I started doing my work, which I now call the Hippocrates Protocol. I developed a protocol to detoxify vaccinations, and it has worked to reverse all autoimmune diseases and cancer.
So this is based on homeopathic principles and also utilizes nutrition. Is that the essence of it?
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Now, you had then, once you had discovered this, got into like your own personal campaign crusade where you were doing vaccine exemptions.
Well, not only that, but I was living in Long Island, New York at the time, and I was doing a public access show, which I called What's Ailing America, mm-hmm. which is now the title of my internet radio show on highwaytohealth.net. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I will never run out of answers to that question because there's so much ailing America. But yes, I started giving vaccine exemptions to my clients. And I also started giving protocols to people. What I do is I take a very detailed history from people. I determine what toxins they have in them, because it's not just the inoculations, of course. The inoculations are what's corrupting the immune system. As I explain in my paper on my website, drcarly.com, my paper is entitled Inoculations, the True Weapons of Mass Destruction. But I also find out what other toxins they have in them, including pesticides and all kinds of different toxins, sure. which are explained in my diagrams. And I develop a protocol to detoxify the toxins one at a time, as well as giving them nutritional supplements that they can use to heal the damage, et cetera, et cetera. Anyways, but when I started doing this television show, let's just say the persecution commenced.
So were you in private practice at this time doing this detox protocol? You had basically given up the practice of surgery at this point?
Oh, yes. After this experience with my son, that's when I realized what I had to do. Mm-hmm. Because the knowledge, the realization that my profession is causing the biggest epidemic that the world has ever known, which I call vaccine-induced disease syndrome, mm-hmm. I became outraged. Totally outraged at this, because as a matter of fact, once I caught up in my sleep and started looking back on my medical notes, and especially this book, Harrison's Principles of Internal Medicine, I realized that they actually admit in many of their documents that these drugs, especially the inoculations, are causing all these demyelinating diseases. And of course, what they do is they just change the name of the disease and they call it something else. Mm-hmm. For example, autism is subacute sclerosing panencephalitis in the book Harrison's Principle of Internal Medicine. So I decided that I had to, if you want to call it, go on a crusade, I don't know what else, that I had to expose what my profession is doing. Because, as I said, I went into this profession because I wanted to help people. And through various years of experiences, I realized that doctors have become nothing but drug pushers with a prescription pad. Worse yet, they're becoming like giant mosquitoes with white coats, inoculating people with diseases, and then giving them drugs which are not going to help them, but are just going to continue to give them side effects until they die.
So when you came to this realization that there was this toxic overload and that things could be done with it, I noticed that you also have placed a lot of emphasis on the role of the nervous system in this process, specifically demyelinization, which would be associated with the toxins and the like, and also subluxation.
Yes.
So how did you come to the realization that the nervous system was key and tie this whole thing together?
Well, because of my experience with chiropractic. Mm-hmm. You see, there's nothing like experiencing something yourself. And
yeah.
That is why once I started going to chiropractors, mm-hmm. and had my health improved tremendously from having adjustments done to me, mm-hmm. it didn't matter what the white coats told me. I knew the truth. And that's mm-hmm. the difference between believing and knowing something.
So how did you transition from having essentially kind of a neck pain experience to one where you realized that the role of the nervous system was what the real focus of chiropractic was?
Well, I have to thank Dr. Sal Martingano for that,
mm-hmm.
because I was lucky enough to start coming to Dr. Martingano as a patient myself when I moved to Florida,
mm-hmm.
because my neck is still quite a mess from my experience with the car accident.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually gives a lecture to his patients when they start coming to the office, where he told me things I never learned in medical school, including the gigantic role of the autonomic nervous system in innervating all the various organs and things of that nature. Of course, certain things like that had been told to me, but it wasn't until I put together the subluxation aspect of things along with the fact that these various organs are dysfunctional that I realized the tremendous problem that people are having with their bodies because they have subluxation. And, of course, my experience in reversing vaccine-induced diseases, which in the nervous system are basically caused by demyelination, that's when I realized that these two aspects of pathology of the nervous system are what's causing most of the disease in the world today, between demyelination caused by the antibody attack on myelin,
mm-hmm.
by the vaccine process, which is explained in my paper, as well as the subluxations. And that's when Dr. Martingano and I teamed up and started doing vaccine conferences to tell people what we have learned by speaking to each other.
I'm sorry, I was just going to say, could you give us a brief overview of that process, how the vaccines induce demyelinization and inflammatory processes?
Yes.
A great job of that on your website. I thought you could give them a little capsule.
Sure, I would be happy to do that. Well, the two main problems that inoculations are causing as these viruses are being injected into you,
mm-hmm.
instead of just inhaling them or taking them in your GI tract, which is what, you know, nature mm-hmm. is meant to do, is bypassing IgA, which is a very important mm-hmm. antibody which lines the respiratory and gastrointestinal tract, which gets the proper sequence of events going to enable you to push the disease out and become immune for life. This is called natural immunity.
So you've completely bypassed that initial mechanism, that initial sentinel or gatekeeper that mechanically and on a biological level kind of regulates what gets in.
When you're vaccinated, you bypass
it. Yeah, you bypass it.
Exactly.
Right.
As a matter of fact, think of this. They're always telling mm-hmm. us how dangerous it is for us to be, you know, bitten by mosquitoes and other vectors with mm-hmm. all these diseases, and that's mm-hmm. how you get encephalitis mm-hmm. and meningitis and all these different things. Well, that's why I came up with the visual of the white coats as a giant mosquito mm-hmm. with their syringe loaded with these things as mm-hmm. opposed to just a little mosquito. But yes, you're bypassing the IgA. And what happens is, through various processes, you can either have the antigen within the vaccines actually mimicking myelin, which happens especially with the measles virus, and mm-hmm. you develop an antibody against the measles, which
yes.
then attacks the myelin, or you can actually develop antibodies against various things themselves, because you have to understand that not only are they putting viruses in you, but the culture media on which they culture the viruses are also being injected into you. There is no way to separate these antigens from the viruses themselves.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we're talking monkey kidney. I mean, I could go on and on, but very disturbing. Now there's 13 vaccines which actually use aborted fetal cells mm-hmm. in order to culture the viruses. So picture yourself getting injected with a little bit of a fetal nervous system into you, getting some myelin, and you develop antibodies against the myelin because mm-hmm. your body recognizes that as foreign, and then those anti-myelin antibodies attack your myelin. Mm-hmm. So through that process or through the molecular mimicry where the antibodies against the measles virus mimic the myelin, you can actually start to attack the myelin of the nervous system. And basically what I realize is since the so many of the nerves in the nervous system are covered with myelin, and this is, of course, what allows proper conduction of the nerve impulse, once the myelin starts to be destroyed, you're not getting proper conduction of the nervous impulses, mm-hmm. yes. just like you're not getting proper conduction when there's subluxation. Mm-hmm. And as the process continues to get worse and worse, of course, your disease symptoms start to manifest themselves. And that's when I realized that disease symptoms are nothing more than your body trying to tell you there's something wrong, you have a problem. And of course, what most people do is go to the white coats, get a prescription, get a drug, mm-hmm. which causes more side effects, etc. So this was one of the biggest Ford lights that went off in my head, and I realized the extent of this. As a matter of fact, as I said, in Harrison's Principle of Internal Medicine, they actually do admit, especially in the earlier versions of the book. The 2005 edition, which I recently got, seems to have deleted many of these references. Mm. I'm sure it has nothing to do with my work. But one of the most amazing quotes that I have from Harrison's from the 1970 edition, which one of my listeners in Pennsylvania sent me, was in regards to a disease called acute necrotizing hemorrhagic leukoencephalitis. Mm-hmm. Of course, they, you know, give it these long names that nobody can pronounce, and the medical students just read this and go mm-hmm. back to sleep. Mm-hmm. But in this description in Harrison's in the 1970 edition, they actually admit that the animal model for this problem is created by injecting the pertussis vaccine. Mm-hmm. And by reading the description of this problem, I realized that this is, in fact, sudden infant death syndrome mm-hmm. and or shaken baby syndrome. Mm-hmm. And the only difference between the two is, did the child have any other bruises or possibly a couple broken yes. bones, mm-hmm. which allowed the authorities to come in and say, you shook your baby, and therefore, not only is your baby dead, but we're going to charge you with murder, and you're going to go to jail for the rest of
your
life. Alan Yurko.
Yes.
As a matter of fact, I was involved in helping Alan Yurko. I wish so much that I had found this information before he ended up having his case. But you see,
tragic.
I have the proof, mm-hmm. in their own mm-hmm. words, that these things are what's causing all these neurological problems. And not just the neurological problems, let me say. If you develop antibodies against the lung tissue, you get asthma. Antibodies against the beta cells in the pancreas, you get insulin-dependent yes. diabetes, and on and on and on. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, I reversed all autoimmune diseases and cancer with my protocol. And this is why the medical mafia came after me to the extent that they did. They actually charged me with practicing medicine with a mental illness because of my television show. And this was pretty amazing. I want to say that I worked in the hospital since I was 16 years old as an x-ray aide. Mm-hmm. As I said, then I became an x-ray technician, then a diagnostic medical sonographer, then a doctor. I never had a single complaint from any patient I've ever treated. Mm-hmm. So they had to go after me because of my TV show. So they charged me with practicing medicine with a mental illness. My mental illness involved one delusion, mm-hmm. and my delusion is that there are a few conspiracies. So I have a mental illness being a delusion of conspiracy. What the Medical Board of New York State ordered me to do to keep my license to kill was to undergo electroshock therapy, institutionalization, and or drugging.
They wanted you to have electroshock therapy?
Well, they wouldn't tell me which thing I would have to have until I agreed to their treatment.
Oh.
So that was what was proposed to me.
It had to be with an approved psychiatrist.
Of course.
But the thing that blew my mind about all of this, because I read those papers, you know, we do a lot of due diligence before we invite guests.
Okay.
And I said, they had acknowledged that you had the knowledge and the skill to practice medicine.
Oh, yes.
They acknowledged that there was no negligence and no patient harm. And the part that just blew my mind...
to your life.
Well, what was the guy's name down here?
Was where they said... The so-called psychiatrist who testified against you said that these people appear perfectly normal otherwise, and they're able to function professionally until this one delusion kicks in.
Right.
In your case, the delusion being the medical conspiracy.
Yes. Well, as a matter of fact, there's a couple of funny things. Let me just say that this one psychiatrist, Dr. Zev Labens, who testified that I have this delusion of conspiracy, was the only one who came up with this diagnosis. I had 10 psychiatrists and psychologists evaluate me mm-hmm. and found that I was mentally fine. As a matter mm-hmm. of fact, I even did their testing, their MMPI and
yes.
the Rorschach, and those
and
tests
they acknowledged
came
that they were okay.
Within
I remember
normal
all
limits.
That came out.
Yes, yes.
That didn't bother them.
Right. And not only that, but even more funny, because I must say, you have to have a sense of humor after these experiences to keep on going, was the fact that I actually was questioned for an entire day about my work about vaccine-induced diseases. Mm-hmm. I asked for them to present a medical doctor for me to inquire of him as to, you know, certain things that I had said. And the state's attorney actually said that I was considered the expert in vaccines, and therefore there was no need for them to present anyone else. So here they're admitting that I'm an expert in vaccines, mm-hmm. but yet not allowing me to prove that, you know, they're actually causing problems by
Well, they admitted that there was nothing wrong with your qualifications,
yes.
that there was absolutely nothing wrong with your patient relationships. There was no negligence.
Exactly.
But it was only because you harbored this one belief, everything else was just fine, that they were going to declare you unable to practice. That just blew my mind.
Dr. Ken is also an attorney who just passed his California bar. So,
well there's again, a light at the end.
My own thing was I realized all that was happening, and I said, you know, I've got to become an attorney. That's the next step in this process.
Well, I just have to say I wish you well because, of course, the attorneys are also prevented in many ways from doing the right thing. But let's just say there's a higher force at work here bringing us all together.
Yes.
But I just want to underscore the fact that these medical minions actually ordered me to undergo one of these quote-unquote treatments, mm-hmm. me, the anti-drug doctor, being ordered to undergo psychiatric drugging. Mm-hmm. And basically what I did was I told them they can keep their license to kill. I'm a teacher now. Mm-hmm. And I've actually developed an agreement contract that I give to my clients mm-hmm. where they basically are told that the Medical Board of New York State has determined that I have a delusion of conspiracy. However, you being advised of this have decided to have me teach you this protocol that has worked for years before this ever happened mm-hmm. and that you are doing so with the full knowledge that I have this quote-unquote delusion.
Do you have to even disclose that? Because what you're doing is unlicensed anyway. So why would you have to even disclose it?
Because I want people to know what they're doing. You see?
No, it's not mandated. It's something that you want to do. Okay.
No, people have to realize what these medical boards are actually doing. As a matter of fact, I was put on the Quackwatch site, mm-hmm. and if you go to the Quackwatch site, you will see that it's basically a who's who of alternative healers.
Well, when our instrumentation made it on the Quackwatch site, I said, we've arrived. We've arrived.
Exactly.
Yeah. I've had a public debate with Barrett, which was
really
fun. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was fun.
Well, all I can do is wish for Mr. Barrett that whenever he does get whatever disease is going to bring him to his last breath, that he finds a doctor just like the ones that he's promoting. Because, of course, not only are they going after doctors like me and what they've done to me, the torture they have put me through, there are no words. Mm-hmm. But allowing certain doctors to do different things, as a matter of fact, let me also say that one of the things I do now is go into the hospital as a patient advocate. When people have a loved one in the hospital, and let's just say they smell a rat and realize that, you know, maybe they went in with a pneumonia and they end up in cardiac arrest after a blood transfusion that they were not told about. And I actually had an opportunity in New York to report a doctor with a homicide in progress to the Suffolk County District Attorney, Thomas Spoda. The detective...
Homicide? I mean intentional?
Well, what I reported was a homicide in progress, yes, because by going into the hospital and reviewing the medical records, it was self-evident to me that this mismatched blood transfusion, which was not reported as a reaction, which the patient's family was never told that this had happened, it was just like what I said, the elderly man who they wanted his nursing home bed went into the hospital with a touch of pneumonia. They come in one day, he's in the ICU on life support, and they're basically told that they have to make an, you know, do not resuscitate, and he's not going to survive. Mm. And by reviewing the medical records, I realized that this was done intentional. Because, of course, the patient's family had told me how he had just been put on Medicare, mm-hmm. his estate had run out, and they needed this nursing home bed for somebody else. What was so bone-chilling in this experience was the detective who called me back. They waited for the man to die. But when the detective called me back, he actually told me that the same hospital had killed his mother. Mm. But there was nothing he could do. He didn't use the word medical error. He didn't say negligent. He said they killed his mother. Mm. And that's when I realized that that's another function of the medical doctors. As a matter of fact, I reported this doctor to the New York State Medical Board, and they did nothing. Mm-hmm. And that's what people have to realize. The doctors who are actually killing people, And I'm saying some of them intentionally. Not, of course, there's many doctors killing people just by doing what they always do. Mm-hmm. But the point is that the medical boards are going after people like me.
Absolutely. I had an opportunity to speak with Jim Turner. I'm sure you're familiar with him, the attorney.
Yes.
Involved in health freedom. And he just said, very matter of fact, he said, you know, this just isn't a chiropractic thing. He said a lot of medical physicians are losing their licenses to practice.
Yes.
And it's simply because they're using procedures that they dislike. And it's almost always on the basis of someone in their profession, certainly not a patient complaint, that brings them down.
Exactly.
And when I had read this and talked to Jim about it, the thing that really got me was another article in the paper, which was about an MD who had botched a late-term abortion and had severed the arm of the fetus. So now here's this child who's alive, who's going to go through life missing a limb and know that the reason for that was that an abortion was attempted, was unsuccessful.
Wow.
And this person was permitted to continue to practice.
Yes.
I forgot what the sanction was, but they didn't revoke his license.
Yes. Well, unfortunately, this is what's going on. As a matter of fact, an amazing situation that came about was the same medical board who said, I have a delusion of conspiracy in terms of, you know, various things being covered up.
Yes.
Subsequently, there was a law passed by the New York State Legislature because the New York State Medical Board actually received over 100 complaints of a doctor in upstate New York sexually abusing neurologically damaged children, and they did nothing. And so they passed a law stating that the medical board must report criminal behavior, mm-hmm. which is so amazing
yes.
that they would not be expected to report criminal behavior.
In other words, there's so much criminal behavior going on that's unreported, they felt they had to do something about it.
Well, they were forced to do something because the outcry was so massive in this
yes.
case. But you see, what I've decided to do is basically prove to my profession, those with a conscience, that you do not need a license. A license is a limitation.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, one of my experts in my family court case where they took away my son because of what I'm doing, and I actually had a judge tell me that if I don't stop doing what I'm doing, I will never see my son again. And I told this judge I will not make a deal with the devil. Because, you see, I realize the extent of these vaccine-induced diseases, that they are going to cause, you know, the death and destruction of an entire generation of children now as the inoculation protocols continue to increase, and especially now that we're all threatened with the bird flu.
Can I have to interrupt you for a second because
yes.
I'm speechless for a moment. A judge said unless you change your vocation, your the way you make a living, that you will not be able to see your son anymore.
Her exact words is that I have to stop doing what I'm doing, meaning being on television and doing my work. Yes, Judge Florence Monway, yes, of New York State.
What's the outcome now?
I haven't seen my son for over 2 years. No calls, no visits, as far as I know.
Court ordered.
Well, no, there's no court order. You see, this is what happened. Unfortunately, my son was abused, and that started this whole family court situation by his father. And there is no court order that I can't see my son. What happened was on my last supervised visit with my son, he started crying and begging me to help him because of the situation he was involved in. And so the people supervising the visits stopped the visitation as a message to my son that you cannot discuss these things with your mother. And that's what started the whole proceeding in regards to me getting my visitation back, and that's when this judge told me, off the record, of course.
Oh, this is off the record.
Of course it's off the record, yes. But I must say that I've appealed my son's case in the New York State Appellate Division in Brooklyn, and the judge, another judge who's involved in the case in the family court, Judge Richard Lawrence, has refused to release the transcripts of the case, certain of the transcripts, because these are the most damaging transcripts, and of course, that is why he won't release them. So the whole appeal is in limbo because he's refusing to release the transcripts. I went as high as the United States Supreme Court in my son's case, pro se, to try to rescue my son. And that's when I realized I just have to put it up to the Creator and have to let things just, you know, go as they're going to go. This is happening to a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not the only medical doctor who stepped out of the box who's had their children used as a way to try to get them to give up what they're doing.
And that's the point I want to make is that, you know, it's one thing to say I give up my career or,
right.
you know, I give up my license.
Yes.
You know, I went to school, invested, everything else.
Yes.
But it's quite another thing to say now we're going to leverage your children. I mean, this
exactly.
talk about mafia.
Yes.
I mean, you know, and that the court systems – would be you know, in cahoots with the medical, you know, with the medical board.
Well, that's what proves there's a conspiracy, you see. Mm-hmm. And let me just also finish up what I was talking about. This one doctor who was trying to help me, Dr. Monty Weinstein, who's a psychologist who actually ran a Florida mental institution, a psychiatry institution for children himself for 7 years. This doctor was so outraged at what they had done to me. He participated in my medical board hearings and my family court situation. They spent an entire day questioning him about financial matters, and actually the IRS ended up going to his house with a SWAT team because of the fact that he had helped me. This is how far the persecution has gone in my case.
Wow.
Now, Dr. Monty Weinstein was so outraged at what they had done to me that he actually found an attorney who wants to sue the New York State Medical Board in federal court on my behalf. I have not gotten around to do this yet because even going through the files that I have in my garage, I mean, it's massive. Sure. It would take me a couple of months just to go through everything and copy them. And I may eventually do that at some point, and he's actually offered to do this pro bono. But you see, what I know in my heart that I'm supposed to do is prove to medical doctors, as I said, you do not need a license. It's a limitation. Mm-hmm. What physicians are supposed to be is teachers. Mm-hmm. And that's what I do. I teach people what's making them sick, i.e. everything the FDA and the EPA is saying is okay, fluoride, all these different things, aspartame, it's killing you, mm-hmm. vaccinations, etc. And teaching them natural ways to detoxify themselves, as well as what supplements are going to heal them, as well as pointing to the chiropractors and saying, go see them. Because I must just say, and maybe you can add, Sal and I have had so many wonderful conversations, especially in terms of Antoine Bachop. Mm-hmm. You can't imagine what happened when I started learning about him, and that this man had actually proven over 100 years ago that it's not the germs that are making you sick, it's your sick body making the germs.
Yes.
And when I talked to Sal about this, he said, oh yeah, we have courses on that.
The whole idea of pleomorphism, which more or less died with Pasteur.
Exactly.
And the evidence is still there.
In fact, that was an interesting awakening when we did a seminar here in the office.
Yes.
Rebecca came to the seminar.
Yes.
I have a slide on Bechamp. Uh-huh. How did you learn that?
Sure. Yeah.
It's common stuff that we do.
Well, the other thing that I had become interested in 30 years ago or so when I was teaching microbiology to chiropractic students was a rather obscure paper from a professor in Delray College at Corpus Christi. And he had talked about precisely what you do on your website, and that is the notion of, with live vaccines, the genetic material being incorporated into the genetic material of the recipient of the vaccine and potentially being transmitted longitudinally. And the phrase he used that gave me goosebumps then and still does even talking about it today, three words I'll never forget, uncontrolled genetic manipulation.
As a matter of fact, it gets even more scary than that because what they're now doing is creating DNA vaccines. Mm-hmm. And what these DNA vaccines have in them, of course, are plasmids of DNA, which are just little rings of DNA that they put in there. And that's when I realized that they're actually going to be causing the genetic manipulation of the human race. And as you said, it is going to be transmitted onto further generations. As a matter of fact, as I basically served Dr. William Atkinson of the CDC with my email notification of him that he's going to be tried with crimes against humanity, mm-hmm. after I found this document that he helped prepare talking about vaccine-induced disabilities, illnesses, and death, after he told my client that there is no such thing as vaccine-induced diseases, it was very funny how he emailed me from his home email address, and his home email address is plasmid1.
Oh,
and that was chilling because basically I realized that he is considering himself the number one plasmid, that the CDC is actually going forward with these attempts. I mean, how can it not be a conspiracy?
I say it kind of feels like a conspiracy, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. And that's, of course, when I realized that there is a conspiracy. The conspiracy is massive. It's a conspiracy to genetically alter, to dumb down, to sicken and kill the American population at very big profits, of course, to the medical cartels. And that is why I will never stop doing what I'm doing. And it is so exciting to me, as I said, through my association with Dr. Martingano, to be meeting all of you. And I really want to help get this information out to the people because, you see, what I do is just pure common sense. Mm-hmm. And I want to say that for all these years, since I started my public access show on Long Island, I've been trying to get a pediatrician a Department of Immunology professor, a CDC official, a public health official, to come on my show and debate these
anybody
issues
just
with
debate
me.
The issue, right?
I even offered to give a reward of $1,000 to anyone who was willing to do so. And there's been a couple of times where I've had people agree to come on my show because I made them believe that I was I wanted to discuss some article they wrote about, you know, there's a shortage of a vaccine, and yes, you must come on the air and talk to people about this. But then they would Google me and they'd find out who I really am. And it's funny how all of a sudden they would refuse to come on the show. So, you see, these people will never come out and go head-to-head with me on this issue. And that is the reason that they're going after me to the extent that they are, because, A, they know I will not be bought out. I've had attempts on my life. There's many things that have happened to me. But also, because I am a medical doctor, you see, this is what makes me so dangerous. Various chiropractors, especially Dr. Ted Koren, who's one of my heroes, have spoken out about vaccines. But, of course, you know, you guys are quacks, so who's going to listen to you?
Right, right.
But when I say something, and especially when I prove, not only with my own experiences, but with over 1,000 people that I've reversed all these diseases in, that what I do works, and it's because I address the vaccination issue, it's self-evident that this is truth. And that is what's waking up people. I have clients all over the world at this point, and the word is spreading, and that is the good
news. Has anyone ever said, if you abandon this, everything will go away, your life will be okay?
Well, not that they've said, if I abandon it, it'll go away.
Yeah.
Right. They've threatened me, like I said.
Well,
that
I mean, for example, would they give you back your son and your license and such, do you think, if you stopped?
Well, you see, that would be selling out.
I'm not advocating by any means. I'm just curious if anyone has said, you know, you can make this all go away if.
No, they never said that to me, because I'm sure they realized that I would not even go into such a discussion. Mm-hmm. It was just the one time where the judge had told me, if I don't stop doing what I'm doing, I'll never see my son again.
Right.
And of course, and see, that's when I realized, first of all, you can't make a deal with the devil, because
Absolutely.
The devil doesn't keep their word anyways. Mm-hmm. And I know various people.
Very important point.
Yes, and I know various people who have, shall we say, folded on some level or another.
Well, I'm bringing this up because I know some people in our profession who more or less have been in situations where they've been told, if you stop doing this or if you stop fighting this, it'll be okay.
Lost their kids in divorce situations because they wouldn't vaccinate them in that whole thing. I mean, that's a common situation.
Yeah.
Yes, and this is what's used against people. And you see, all I can say is that my conscience is very strong, and I cannot do that. And that's what I'm trying to show people, is that there is a higher power, the vibration of love energy, the truth, that is going to protect all of us and bring us together. And we are going to, let's just say, put on top of the mountain of lies that we're being told in this country, the health issues, especially that vaccinations are helping us. And that's going to bring down the mountain of lies and cause the entire mountain of lies to crumble. As a matter of fact, one of the most important little factoids I found in the 1970 Harrison's Principle of Internal Medicine is the fact that they actually say that vaccines do not prevent disease. Mm-hmm. They give you a chronic case of the disease, which makes antibodies to help you fight disease.
Yes.
And I was like, whoa, there you go.
There you go.
Yes. And so now, one of the things, and you basically spoke right at it, but maybe we'll make the articulate the specific distinction. There's a difference between humoral immunity and cell immunity.
Yes.
And I think that's a very important thing for people to understand. Can you talk about that for a moment?
Well, of course, the B cells that make the antibodies, they're doing so basically to cause the antigens, be they viruses or bacteria or cancer cells in the body, to be marked by the immune system as something that needs to be eliminated. And that's when the T cells come in, those little, what I call Pac-Man cells, just to try to speak plainly so people understand, that are supposed to be gobbling up the antigens that have been so marked by the antibodies created by the B cells. And this is what people have to realize. The B cells by themselves creating antibody, it doesn't do anything to get rid of the problem. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, one of the big problems that occurs from this situation is that you can get these various antigens covered with antibody, and then that joins with the various antigens, and then they actually join together, and they can muck up your, you know, vascular system,
yes,
and
you were mentioning
the immune complexes can be created, et cetera, et cetera. So you have to have a working T-cell system as well in order to bring about natural immunity. Mm-hmm. And this is what I realized, is that what the vaccines do is cause the B-cells to become hyperactive mm-hmm. and make the T-cells shut down. Mm-hmm. And, of course, by introducing adjuvants into the inoculations, which actually make the B-cell system go even more hyperactive.
Things like that, thimerosal, aluminum, so on.
Mm-hmm. Right, the aluminum sulfate. I mean,
The thimerosal is primarily a preservative.
Okay. Exactly.
They actually add toxic chemicals because they want a more robust immune response.
To create more, yeah.
So they say, well, we're not getting the titer we want, so we're going to put some truly nasty stuff, like aluminum.
Turbocharge the stuff.
That's going to cause your immune system to scream louder.
Yeah. Exactly.
Essentially, that's what they're doing, and most people don't know about these adjuvants.
Exactly.
And it's really horrible stuff. I had an interesting experience I'll share with you very briefly. You'd enjoy this. You talked about TED. Ted called me one day and said, you know, they've been coming after me because of my brochure that claims that all these things are included in the vaccines. And someone actually gave it to a pediatrician who called Merck and Company and said, is this stuff really in there? And the Merck people said, well, let me call this guy. And they called Ted and they said, why don't you come and tour our plant where we produce the vaccines? And Ted said, want to visit a vaccine factory? And I said, sure. So it was all set up, we thought. And then they called Ted and they said, we're sorry, but we ran it through legal. And they said, there's a liability issue. You might be exposed to something. I said, I'll sign a waiver. I said, I want to see this place. I said, no problem. I'll sign a plenary release, you know. They processed that. And then they called back and they said, no, we're sorry. What it boiled down to was, this is proprietary information, and you might see something on the tour that would disclose a proprietary process that would, you know, place us at a competitive disadvantage.
Right, but that would allow you to create your own vaccine.
Well, it would allow us to see what was really in there and tell people about it, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, if you go on the CDC's own website, they actually list some of the ingredients of vaccinations. And what was so amazing to me was a statement that they make on there is something to the effect of, yes, these things are in vaccines, but you're exposed to so many toxins, what's a few more?
Yeah.
And I want to also just state, see, it's amazing what happens. I get emails from all over the world, people that are involved in this inoculation exposure, send me various papers that are being written and things of that nature. Of course, they're not doing anything in the United States to expose what's going on, but in various other countries, they are.
Absolutely.
And I have one paper, I believe it's from Sweden, where they actually researched the effect of just injecting the adjuvants themselves into people and found that lymphoid tumors were being created.
Wow.
And so, I mean, the evidence of what I'm saying is true in my paper, it just keeps on getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
So let me ask this now. I want to find out a little bit more about your service and how it works.
Yes.
Because
I'm a chiropractor, you know, and wherever.
Yes.
I've got a patient that's got you know, a vaccine damaged child, or you know, quasi damaged, maybe
any autoimmune disease or cancer.
Right. So, you know, strange. You know, suddenly there's strange symptoms since the vaccines.
Right.
They want to go through your protocol.
Yes.
How does that? Take me just through the
process. How does it work? Yeah. Because we of course obviously try to dissuade people from doing this to begin with, but so many
vaccines mean
good. Yes. So many good people have it done, thinking they're being diligent parents.
Yes.
And it's too late.
Or that their children can't go to school unless they get it
right.
done.
Exactly.
Which is why I give them a voucher where basically they take it into the school and say, okay, because I can't give exemptions anymore. Mm-hmm. So now the way I handle it is I have them say, okay, fine, you want to vaccinate my child? No problem. Just sign this contract that says if they're killed or damaged health-wise, that you will accept personal responsibility.
What kind of results have you gotten with that?
Well, they will never sign it.
Of course not.
So the child is allowed into school. And it's worked from kindergarten all the way from college. Yes. So
they have honored them.
Yes.
Hmm. Well, they don't honor it. It's a matter that they refuse. But they just say, we don't, you know, the law says
we don't have to sign this, and you have to vaccinate your child. That's what I was
saying. Well, that has never happened.
That hasn't happened.
That has never happened. Because you see, what people don't realize is that you have a right to contract yourself. Mm-hmm. And if you're saying that you're going along with it as long as they're taking responsibility, because, of course, they can take the mountain of handouts that I give all my clients in with them that proves that vaccines are causing all these problems and say, look, I've done my research. this is what's happening, apparently, and if you have any proof it's not happening, fine. And since I know it's bad for my child, therefore I cannot do it. Mm-hmm. But so you have to take responsibility. And as I said, it has worked. Mm-hmm. Of course, one thing a lot of people do is the religious exemptions. And I had a case in New York where they actually took the parent to Supreme Court to make him prove he believed in God, mm-hmm. because more than 10% of the parents had refused to inoculate, which, of course, is a problem with the federal funding. So that is why I'm telling people, you know, you go ahead and get this done. It's like playing Russian roulette with your child. No investigate question. Before you inoculate.
But again, going back to Patrick's question, it's too late. They've already done it.
Yes.
What kind of service do you offer? And can it be done remotely, for lack of a better term, without having to visit you in Florida?
Yes, I have clients all over the world. And what I do is I have people fill out a very detailed history form. I ask them their exposure of toxins that they know about. I can also figure out certain things just knowing what area that they live in, et cetera, what symptoms that they're having. And basically what I do is I develop a protocol for them to detoxify one thing at a time using homeopathic nosodes, which are natural remedies with no side effects. That actually take the toxins out. It's like a surgical strike approach at the various toxins, and then suggest to them what I would do if I was them, because I'm not practicing medicine, and that's how I have kept myself out of problems with that, and different supplements that will reverse the damage that's been caused, natural antibiotic approaches such as colloidal silver and other things I didn't learn about in medical school, and then they go through the different detoxification steps one at a time until they get to a vibration of wellness to the point where they don't need my services anymore. And I'm very proud of the fact that once they do that, they never come back to me again.
What's the range of time that that protocol might take, you know, before they're through
it? It depends on how deep of a hole they're in. What I've learned over the years is that the three main factors involved in the response that is achieved, as well as how long it takes, is how old the person is, because the younger they are, the more ability they have to heal themselves, how long they've had the problem, and also how compliant they are with the protocol, because obviously if they're just going to occasionally do this and that, it's not going to work.
Was it difficult to do?
Well, it's not that it's difficult. There's quite a few things if they really want to get, because see, unfortunately,
people, there a lot of dosing several times a day?
Three times a day. That's most of the things are 3 times a day. Yeah. And it's not that it's hard, but of course, one of the other problems is that it's not covered by insurance. Now, I don't sell any products, but I do tell people where they can get certain things, because some things can only be obtained from one place. Some things can be obtained from their local health food store. But that's what I do, is take them through that. And in the meantime, teach them what not to do, because, of course, you know, drinking aspartame and fluoride and all these other things are very problematic. So it's an educational process.
Yes. And that's, so you give them lifestyle counseling in addition to the detoxification protocol.
Exactly.
Great.
Yes. Yeah. And that's what I do. And as I said, I actually sent a copy of my agreement contract to the New York State Medical Board, and I said, this is what I'm doing now. Any problem, boys and girls? And I never heard back from them. So they're very aware of what I'm doing. And they occasionally send me moles. People call me on the phone and ask if I can cure cancer and different things like that as they're tape recording me. And my response is always the same. No, I can't cure cancer, but I can teach you how to detoxify yourself and reverse the problem. And this is what I do.
Well, that's awesome. What we'll do, again, as I mentioned earlier, the contact information we'll put in the reference sheet for all those who are listening. What is the website address that you have?
www.drcarley.com. That's drcarley.com. And I really encourage people, there's quite a long homepage, but the information on there is really important, especially as we're getting ready to be assaulted with bird flu vaccines. To read about how the 1918 flu epidemic was actually caused by the inoculations given to the soldiers in World War II, or World War I, excuse me. And, you know, people have to realize that, you know, apparently the MO has not changed by the powers that be, and this is the time where we really need to wake up about this. If I could also give out my phone number, because I speak for hours on the phone to people, networking and trying to help them in any way I can. My phone number is 321-984-5350. My email address is drcarley@drcarley.com, and there's also a button you could click on my website if you would like to email me and ask me any questions.
Terrific. And again, you know, if you're driving, don't crash trying to write it all down. It will be on your reference sheet. You can look it up there. I want to say that it's really fascinating speaking with you. There's obviously a wealth of information and a large passion that drives it. And I can tell you that this audience is an audience of complete allies our slogan for On Purpose is "You're not alone." And
what a moment! Yeah. To finally not feel alone. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Yeah. So I know that looking at you paid what I would consider the ultimate prices for your pursuit of the truth, and this is hopefully now a new family that you'll finally feel like you're not alone. You're not the outcast, but somebody who's on the inside with something that we're trying to get done in the world. And we certainly can relate, not on the level that you have experienced, but relate to the persecution and the adversity of trying to promulgate the truth in a higher level of vision for what's best for humanity.
Yes.
So anyway, hopefully we'll have you back again. Love to see you start.
I was going to say, it's just too short.
Yeah.
The hour just flies.
Well, if I could just end on this note, you see, I don't like people to focus on the persecution because although I'm making about a tenth of what I did as a surgeon, I must say that the joy that I have when I get calls from patients, especially the autistic parents or the parents of autistic children that call me up and say, my child just spoke for the first time in whatever number of years.
Yeah.
There's nothing like those kinds of rewards.
That's what keeps chiropractors going.
Exactly. Yeah. And that is why I know that as we join together and put out the truth, and I want to thank you both so much, and also Dr. Martingano, for this opportunity to join forces with the chiropractors. And I can't wait to start doing speaking engagements and teaching them what I know.
Yeah.
Because that's right. What I know my ultimate job is to teach others my protocol so that there's so many people out there doing this that it doesn't matter what happens to me.
That's awesome. Well, with Drs. Sal Martingano, Dr. Christopher Kent, Dr. Rebecca Carley, I'm Dr. Patrick Gentempo. You've been listening to On Purpose. You are not alone.